Let's face it, running a construction company can be chaotic. As business owners, we wear a lot of hats and we're constantly putting out fires. Luckily, there's a way to work simpler with BuilderTrend. I'm a huge advocate for using technology to help run AFT, and BuilderTrend is one of the most crucial tools I rely on to keep me on top of every detail. Built just for home builders and remodelers, this is an easy-to-use platform that helps manage all aspects of my business. My team's been using BuilderTrend's project management platform for the last 5 years, and we love that they're always improving and adding new features to make our lives easier. This is something that we've really tried to take on internally to find ways to improve our system every day. BuilderTrend just released a full set of financial services, added new tools like Takeoff to make estimates more accurate, and launched a total rebrand with a new mission to help change the future of construction, and we are on board. To learn more about how BuilderTrend can help calm the chaos in your construction business, visit buildatrend.com/AFT. When you schedule a demo, you'll receive an exclusive 60-day money-back guarantee only available to my podcast listeners. I'm following BuilderTrend into the future in construction. Come on board with us. Don't miss the Contractors Coalition Summit. You can go to contractorscoalitionsummit.com and join us in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Wednesday, May 15th through Sunday, May 19th. This is going to be an incredible event. Again, for all of you builders and designers looking to take your business to the next level, to learn about all things systems, organization, pricing, social media, marketing, how to be a better business owner, all the things that we wish we knew as early business owners many years ago. We're going to speak about that, also give you a Dropbox with all the content, including contracts and other documents that we're using, as well as KPIs, key performance indicators. So don't miss it. It's a huge opportunity. Some amazing vendors will be there as well that you can network with. So again, Wednesday, May 15th through Sunday, May 19th, 2024 in Minneapolis. Go to contractorscoalitionsummit.com.
I've been thinking about all of the folks who have helped me throughout adulthood. And I think about these wonderful people, men and women who are good, authentic people who have provided coaching to me, who provided opportunities to me. And I think, gosh, I need to call Linda Larson, who got me into appliances 25 years ago. And I just need to thank her. And when I think about that, I think, you know, with Linda, I'm sure she'd love a call from me, but I think what she'd like from me more is to do what she did for me, to have me do it for other people. And that's what's been on my mind, is how do I do that more for others? How do I find out what other people need and how do I help them?
Welcome to the podcast. We have Kevin Headley on with us. Welcome, Kevin.
Hey, Brad. Great to be here.
Oh, this is long overdue, Kevin. I've known you for a long time, VP of sales at Renai America, and actually, before Renai, we tie back. You know, this goes back to your Sub-Zero Wolf days.
That's right. I was a sales manager back in Arizona. I think the first time I shook your hand was at a Houston's restaurant, if I'm not mistaken.
It was a Houston's restaurant. They actually had the best ribs and a good sundae, so you can't go wrong there.
The best ribs, a good sundae, and a perfect after-lunch nap.
Yeah, I typically feel that way after going to Houston's, which is awesome. But, you know, and maybe this is a good tie-in because, you know, a lot of us, you know, who listen to the podcast, entrepreneurs, that's really the audience here. Marketing is a key part of what we do, sales. I don't think there's anyone better than you. The funny thing is, Kevin, I still remember being on a retreat with you and the office came up and he said, you know, what's funny about Michael Scott is that, you know, when you look at it, he's a great salesperson. He's not really a good manager, but he's a good salesperson. How have you been able to blend? Because, you know, in the real world, you know, Michael Scott's a TV show on Office, you know, that's one thing. But you at Renai, you at Sub-Zero Wolf, you're managing people as well as sales. You're working with customers such as myself. How do you kind of work between the two different avenues there?
You know, I love that tie back because I think there's a reason we like The Office, right? We like it because there's a pretty good amount of truth to it. Yeah, it kind of takes the truth and really stretches it far and makes you uncomfortable with the situations that Michael puts himself in. But throughout my career, I have seen over and over again where the leadership within an organization will look at a top performing salesperson that can build relationships, understand customer needs, make cold calls, be successful in delivering value in a way that sets them apart and puts them at number one in terms of performance. And sure enough, that individual will get the tap on the shoulder. Hey, we'd love for you to be a manager and teach everyone else how to do it. And then they become a manager and they become the most awkward person in terms of leading people. And where they're most comfortable is on a sales call. They go on a sales call and then they show their team how it's done. But really, there is a difference between understanding your customers' needs and being able to sell successfully, and then translating those talents and skills over to leadership, right? And that's, I love The Office because I watched this whole process play out, and the way Michael Scott does it, it actually makes me think about my own leadership style, and I go, gosh, am I doing that? Are there times where I'm doing that? I better not be, you know?
So, I mean, you've had a lot of experience with both leadership, sales. I know that's kind of one of your big talents, Kevin. And it's funny, and not to make this a total Office recap, but there's that episode, you know, where they're at Chili's, right? And he's there with Jan and they're selling. And, you know, he ends up getting the sale because he's able to build a relationship of trust, which is kind of at the core of sales and being able to, you know, on a personal level, connect with the person, bring value, show that value. And really, that's what it comes down to. How have you increased those skills or managed that balance between leadership and sales? Because you're doing both, and leadership is not easy. As you mentioned, a great salesperson may not be a great manager.
Yeah. Well, that's a good question, Brad. I think the really opportunity to perform here comes with understanding what skills to use and when, right? So when you watch that, you know, just referring back to that episode, Michael Scott gets pretty aggravated that Jan continues to drive and direct and want to close the sale. And he's like, wait a minute, let's go awesome blossom, extra awesome, you know, let's sing the baby back rib song, and let's actually connect on a personal level. Because one of my customers, Jacob Reese, he owns is an owner in Standard Plumbing Supply. He said this LinkedIn saying on LinkedIn just the other day, and he said, people buy from people they like. And understanding that in a sales situation, I need to put myself in a position where I can build that relationship or be liked, and then I can offer my product or service. And then you go to the leadership side where you're like, hey, all right, now I've got a group of people and I've got to teach them how to do that. And I've got to teach them in a way that doesn't put my need to be liked as a salesperson in front of it, right? I've got to be respected. I've got to deliver value to my team and deliver leadership and decisions, not flinch on those, so that they can go forward and actually execute a plan. So these are where these kind of two ideas start to juxtapose with each other, where, hey, I want to be friendly to create a sale, or I need to lead, and I need to lead in a way that people can follow. And to do that, I've got to be very directive, very clear, very concise. And one of the things that I've been working on lately is clarity, this idea of clarity. Because when you think about leading in a direct manner, doing it with as much clarity as possible, or absolute clarity, will allow the people you're leading to understand the why behind the what, step in line, and deliver what they want, right? I think there was a time when I started my sales career, there were times when I received a directive from my manager or leader, and I clicked my heels and I went and did it. I didn't stop to ask why. You know, if we needed to be at a meeting at 5 a.m., we were there at 5 a.m. I didn't ask, well, why do we need to be there so early? You know, help me understand that. And I think as time has moved and changed over the last few decades, you know, people in general, professionals in general, really need to understand the why behind the what, so that they can bring the what to life.
You know, I think that's phenomenal, Kevin. I'm going to take this to like a sports analogy, because, you know, the reality is we can't manage people today like maybe you and I were managed years ago early in our career, and maybe our parents were, right? I mean, communication, social media, attention span. I mean, there's a lot of things that are distracting, right, in the marketplace. You look at the NFL, which is a good example. I mean, you have a coach like Sean McVay, and, you know, I'm a pretty avid sports guy. And so Sean McVay, the Rams, like, he's really big on, when he's coaching, he explains why. Here's why we're doing this. Here's why we're lining up. Here's why we're calling this audible. So what ends up happening is the players really understand the why, which the why allows them to do, right? And then you have like Bill Belichick, who's been the winningest coach, and he's very stern, right? He just makes them do it. They don't know why. And you look now, he didn't get rehired. And again, not to sidetrack, but you see a lot of success in, you know, these minds that are really educating their team. And I've seen with my team, if they understand why, the direction, if a lot of this goes into vision as a leader, if you can share the vision, if you can share the forecast, if you can share the direction of the company, you know, core values, these things, people buy in, and that buy-in now allows to more success.
Yeah, I think that's where this idea of clarity comes in, because if you can find a way to share the vision with such clarity that it doesn't allow for ambiguity throughout the communication process. And when I mean communication process, you know, if you've got a structured system where, you know, you lead a great company and you've got, over the years, you've hired new project managers and new folks on your team that have to carry your vision down to your subcontractors and all the other folks that are on your team. And you've got to make sure that the way you've communicated to the vision to your lieutenants and your leadership team actually gets down to your subcontractors and your front line. And that's where this idea of clarity really comes in. And I think there was a time where I could, at least for me, I could naturally rely on my ability to communicate and talk and provide enough clarity. And over the last few years, as my roles have expanded at different organizations, I've had to really step back and go, okay, wait a minute. This is my idea. Let me be very specific on developing how clear it can be. And let me figure out how to make it more simple. I think there's a lot of complexity in creating something simple. And that's, you know, what you're talking about at an athletic level or at a sales coaching level or any type of performance leadership. You look at creating simplicity and clarity is what's going to reduce the feedback, the friction that goes from your message when you communicate it down to your team. And when they understand the why behind the what, then they're actually empowered to call an audible and say, hey, now that I understand why we're doing this, I can actually make changes and adjust because the situation might be different than what I expected. And I can still deliver the end goal in my situation, right?
It's a really good example. I mean, and I want to touch on another point you made earlier, because you said people buy from who they like, right, Kevin? And there's a fine balance. I think I shared this on the podcast. You know, there's this statistic that, you know, 90% or some high ratio of malpractice lawsuits are the patient doesn't like the doctor, right? So if the patient likes the doctor, you know, it's pretty rare they're going to assume maybe they work the solution. I think that's very common. I think anyone listening that's been in architecture, design, supply, you know, from the supply side, us as a builder, you know, if there's a toxic relationship with the client, it tends to get tense pretty fast and things can escalate, as opposed to, hey, I really like you and you've tried hard, but let's find a solution. Some things aren't working and whatnot. What's that balance? Because for you, any advice to someone that's saying, okay, you can't be fake, right? You have to be present, but at the same time, mixing the customer who needs to like me. But at the same time, I have to be a little stern with my vendors. I have to be a little stern with my people. What's that balance between liking and still performing?
Yeah, I like this question. If it's all right, I'm going to break it down into a couple of things. And from a sales organization perspective, we talk about kind of our front line in our business. It's typically a territory sales manager type role that's out in a geographic area calling on customers, just like you, Brad, right? Calling on builders and contractors and different things like that. And that role is typically a 51 or 52% customer-based role. They're going to advocate for the customer every time. Hey, if there's ever a coin toss, I'm going to let the customer win. And that next frontline manager has to actually dial that back just a little bit, because you've got to create this balance with the company. And that frontline manager's got to be 49.5, 49% customer, which allows just a little bit more to protect the company's interest and assets. And when you start moving up the chain, you can start to, from a leadership perspective, understand and drive why we need to protect the company. Because ultimately, the company or organization is what is the ability to serve the customer and meet the customer's needs. And so if you don't balance these two, like you just said, you're either going to lose enough money to where you're not in business, or you're going to allow your customers to choose another supplier or another partnership, and you won't have any customers to work with. So this balancing act is very important. And I see this a lot when we are able to take a top performing salesperson who has decided to educate herself or go through management and leadership classes. And as she moves into this leadership role, it's like, okay, here's an opportunity where we might have to approve a return, right? It's something in our business we really don't like to do. We want to get it right the first time. But if we're going to approve a return, we're going to do it in such a way that limits the amount of times we're doing it in the future in a significant manner. And that's where that 49% customer comes in, 51% company. I can still do what the customer wants. I can still deliver what I need to create value in the marketplace, but I'm also able to ensure the future viability and financial health of my organization.
It's so well broken out. Honestly, Kevin, I've never heard it broken out this way. When a lot of us can understand the front line. So my application for me from what you just said is pretty easy. You know, I have my superintendent in the field, they're client facing, they're there every day. It's going to be really important for them. They want to make the customer happy. They're trying, you know, they're on the front line. And so they definitely have to cater on the heavy side to the client. And then, as you're saying, the behind the scenes, the PM, or you mentioned it with the, you know, the frontline manager, again, this isn't a 1090, you know, or a 90-10. I mean, you're saying it's still very customer service friendly, but there has to be a little portion, you know, to the company, because at the end of the day, we are only as good as we can serve our customer, you know, from good product and stand behind it. And the reality is, yeah, not everything goes perfect, but at the end of the day, if Renai is not standing behind us or Renai disappears, that affects all of us greatly. So there has to be some consideration to that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when you talk about this a lot through different guests on this podcast, but you talk about processes and setting up the right building processes, setting up the right plan so that you're getting approvals from the homeowner who's making decisions, you're getting buy-in from subcontractors as you go along the way, so that you're significantly limiting those surprises, which allows you to, when they do come up, because they will, and we should plan for them, when they do come up, we're able to respond in a way that doesn't either jeopardize our organization or jeopardize our relationship with the customer. And so having that foresight, or I'll go back to that clarity in the beginning of, hey, here's the why behind the what that we're doing. If we don't have a customer, it doesn't matter how great our product is, right? It doesn't matter what we're selling or how we're marketing it. So the customer's got to be at the center of everything we do at Renai. One of the things I love about our culture here is we have six cultural beliefs, and one of those is captivate the customer. And the way that we show the folks in our organization the importance of this is every conference room at our headquarters or a manufacturing facility has a red chair at the table. It's red. It's different than all the other color chairs, and stitched on it says captivate the customer. And we leave that chair empty at every possible meeting. Unless there's somebody that needs a chair, we're going to use the chair. But normally we're able to have enough chairs where that one will stay empty. And that represents that the customer has a seat at the table in every meeting and everything we're talking about, because building those processes, creating that clarity and driving it through our teams, it's what's going to allow us to captivate the customer.
Such a good example, because ideally, I mean, you have so many customers, they can't be in presence, but just the theory of them being in that red chair is going to set that apart. How have you been able to, throughout your career, create good culture? I know culture is going to be created whether you want it or not, or whether you're intentionally trying to create culture or not, it's going to become prevalent in your organization. And you mentioned that you said there were six, and maybe you don't share all those because that could be proprietary stuff for Renai. But as far as, you know, Renai and their cultural values, as you know, you, Kevin, with yours, you know, any successes you've had or recommendations, you know, to create good culture?
Well, I mean, I know this will be the third time I'll say this, but it comes back to this leadership concept and the clarity with which we communicate what our culture is. And when I say clarity, I don't necessarily mean in terms of communicating the culture. I don't necessarily mean writing novels and encyclopedias of information on exactly what our culture means and what we do in every situation. But when I say clarity, I mean this simplicity aspect of, I can take this concept of captivate the customer, and the saying behind it is, I come to work every day to delight our customers, right? And that there's a lot that can fall under that. And the clarity comes that the customer is first, and there's clarity that's involved in other aspects or pillars of our culture. So another, and we won't go through all of them, but another cultural belief at Renai America Corporation is process first, that we develop effective processes to maintain quality and to maintain all of our other cultural beliefs. And these two cultural beliefs are highly intertwined, just like all of our other four cultural beliefs are. And so this is a good example of how to create clarity within a culture. Now, you can set it up and you can communicate it, but what does it take to live it? Right. I think this is where the magic really happens, because one of the things that I do in my role at Renai is I look for examples of when our team, anybody on our team, is doing something that's demonstrating a cultural belief and that their performance or results is in line with our annual operating goal or our long-term operating plan. And so when I find this great example, I will pick it up. I'll get information on it from a manager, from a coworker, or from the individual themselves who made the contribution. And I will very carefully share it throughout my team that says, here's what Captivate the Customer looks like to me. Jake went out and did this thing, and this was the result. And this is how it affects our annual goal. And that is what Captivate the Customer looks like to me. And this is just one example of living your culture on a day-to-day, hour-to-hour basis, that when you see the opportunity to recognize somebody and you tie it back to that cultural belief that's maybe one of many that's building your culture, then you can actually show your team, this is what great looks like, this is how we do it, and this is why we're recognizing somebody, rather than just, hey, you hit your sales goal, great job.
I love that. And the recognition, I think, is really important. How, you know, whether you can give some examples or not, you know, how does recognition play a role as you've seen in the motivation of your employees, your sales team, you know, creating that culture internally?
Yeah. Recognition is really important. And there have been times throughout my career where I've received feedback from my team that more recognition is needed, right? I think there's times... there have been times that me as a leader, I've been so focused on delivering results, right? Moving into that very directive type of state that I don't stop and look up and go, hey, wait a minute. Part of my role as a leader is to recognize my team for doing a great job. And I need to do that in many ways, right? It happens on an individual basis. It happens on a group basis. It happens on a monetary basis. And one of the things that I've really come to have a greater appreciation and understanding for is this kind of shift from old to new mindset. We talked about that in the beginning here. And this, the old mindset might say, I show my recognition by giving you a paycheck.
Right.
Right. And you've probably heard that. And there's probably people that say it. And I think at the time that could actually work and you could motivate people. I think today though, if you start to say something like that and have that mindset, well, I'm already paying you to do a job. That's your recognition. Be happy and go away. It completely takes the relationship aspect out of it and says, hey, if people buy from other people who they like, people are led by people who they like, right? People align with people they like. And this recognition aspect is really important. It's almost like the right recognition delivered at the right time. It's like pure oxygen to somebody. You know, you never know what their day might be like or what they're going through. But when you stop and you just, you know, you provide that sincere recognition that is specific and tied to the goals that you've been communicating with your team and your company, I think that oxygen, that air, it puts a bounce in someone's step. And it's one of those things that I like recognition. It's not a zero sum game, right? It's, I can provide recognition. The person I'm providing it to feels great about it. And lo and behold, guess how I feel about it? Well, heck, I feel great. You know, it's something that builds the momentum that you're driving to in the culture in your organization. So if you aren't building recognition and the right types of recognition into your culture, you aren't going to be able to take full advantage to enable the other cultural aspects or belief that you're trying to go. Recognition is such an important part to any culture and to any high performing team that it just has to be done.
You know, to that point, Kevin, I think a step further even, I mean, we're essentially on this podcast typically focused on business and entrepreneurship. But when you look at life goals, I mean, if you look at relationships, you know, this world definitely could use more edification or, you know, in other words, as you mentioned, the recognition side, that it's not to be fake. It's not going up to Kevin and being disingenuous, but honestly, like Kevin, who's had an impact on me in my career, the, you know, how you've managed the sales process and how you communicate so well with customers, how you communicate with me and for what it's worth, you know, along this example, you know, we had used a different appliance for many years, and Kevin comes on board with his team, and, you know, lo and behold, we're exclusive, you know, Sub-Zero Wolf. And that change happened many years ago. I know now you're with Renai, and we had a relationship with Renai, and of course now we use Renai on everything, and not that we did before, but long story short is, you know, there's, you know, being genuine, saying, hey, Kevin, there are a lot of, the reason I want to get you on the podcast, because Kevin is super knowledgeable in this field and so good with culture and people and sales and, you know, the energy that when you come into a room. And in life, I don't think we edify each other enough, right? There's a lot of toxicity around, and edification, recognition could do a, you know, brings a lot of health. As you said, it's a zero sum game. So all of us love to be appreciated. We love to hear kind words of affirmation. Why not pass that on? You know, I come from a family that's very sarcastic. You know, that's how I grew up. And so it's nice when you have a little edification in there as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That's important. And, you know, I think that, you know, we talk a lot about emotional intelligence, right? This has been a big topic over the last couple of decades. And, you know, when I first started thinking about emotional intelligence, I thought it was mostly about understanding other people's emotions and how to respond to them properly. And as I've continued to learn more about it, just as equally, if not more so, it's understanding my emotions and how my emotions will affect what I'm doing. And so if I'm having a bad day, it's not going to be very easy for me to be genuine and to find the opportunity to recognize somebody. And so that higher, as I've worked on my own emotional intelligence, I've gone throughout the day and I've stopped and I've said, hey, wait a minute, something's wrong here. Something's off here. I'm not where I need to be mentally, where I need to be emotionally. I need to do something to correct it. For me, I love music. I'm a music guy. I love music trivia. I love listening to music. There's just something about music that it pumps me up and excites me. And you mentioned football earlier, different football coaches, and you know, gosh, I would bet the majority of NFL players, as they prepare for, you know, a game, whether it's a season game or the Super Bowl, they're listening to music, and there's something with that. And that's a tool that I've used when I've noticed that, you know, I might be not in the right emotional state to be able to live the culture, create the clarity, recognize my team, and to tie it all back to the message that I'm driving or trying to lead. I'll throw on some tunes, and there's tunes that I love. You know, I'll take it back to The Office. You brought it up in the beginning, Kickstart My Heart by Motley Crue. Dwight listens to it in the car before he goes and makes a sales call. And you can't not listen to that song and have your heart just thump in your chest and just be excited to go out and do something, you know? And hey, sometimes it's not about Kickstart My Heart. You know, sometimes I'll throw on some Easy Like Sunday Morning, and a smile just comes across my face when it's Easy Like Sunday Morning. Lately, my Sunday mornings have been pretty early, but hey, they're still easy if you have the right aspect or mindset as you go about them. So music is a big tool for me to keep that emotional, keep my emotions in check to ensure that I can continue to lead the way that I want to lead.
This episode is brought to you by Pella Windows. When it comes to building homes at AFT, almost every project has Pella Windows. And they've been just an incredible partner of ours. And locally, Sammy and Adam, they are not only amazing business partners behind us, but they are super close friends. And I speak on the podcast all the time about the importance of relationships, right? Relationships with our customers, with our vendors, with our suppliers. Because at the end of the day, I'm only as good as those that help our brand and assist us in our projects to take it from the ground up all the way to completion. And if we didn't have partners such as Pella, there's no way we'd be who we are today. Over the years, we've built this amazing relationship. When we call them or email them, they respond. They're quick. Their company culture, their integrity, their honesty. You know, they are always there to do what's right for us and the customer. They can do anything from small replacement projects to large custom homes and even multi-million dollar commercial projects. And also, when you think about their product line, they can do ultra contemporary, historical preservation, and large traditional projects. So for anyone, any scale, any size, they're the ones to call. They're here local. You know, they have an amazing Instagram. Make sure and give them a follow to see what they're doing. So if you need windows and doors, give Sammy and Adam a call. We stand behind Pella. We love what they do, their culture, their brand, and especially their quality. And if you want to learn more about Pella Windows, check our show notes. We'll have everything tagged there so you can give them a follow and have their contact information to reach out.
Our clients have worked with the Sub-Zero Wolf & Co. showroom, Scottsdale, on nearly every project. They make the process so easy for us and our customers with either an in-person or virtual consultation. They have dedicated consultants to answer questions, provide helpful solutions, and offer advice and assistance. When you are ready to embark on your kitchen journey, reach out to the Sub-Zero Wolf & Cove showroom, Scottsdale, who will tailor an immersive, rewarding experience just for you in their stunning showroom. Gather ideas, ask questions, and imagine how your dream kitchen might come to life. All catered to you in a low-pressure and highly inspiring environment. View an array of options and see what they look like in full-size kitchen vignettes. And attend a chef-led demonstration to see and taste these appliances in action.
Oh, I think music's super powerful for a lot of reasons. I think I need to hire you as my creative director for my song choices for my reels moving forward. But to your point, Kevin, you know, anyone that's played athletics, yeah, you're going to listen to a song to pump you up before. I mean, you know, and whether you're at the gym or working out, you're right. There's a motivation there. Other outlets, what other outlets do you have? You know, just on a personal level, you mentioned music, you know, for you to keep that life, work-life balance. And, you know, anyone that's been in a management role, you know, there's a lot of stress that's put on you on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, how do you keep that mental, you know, acute mentally, you know, for everything you're dealing with?
Sure. Well, first I mentioned music. I like to listen to music. I actually like to play music. So, where I've lived in different parts, I've lived in Arizona, I've lived in Southern California over the last 15 years. And now I live in Atlanta area in Georgia. In those three places, I've met up with a group of other like-minded individuals and we play music. I happen to play the guitar. And so, I that's just a huge outlet for me to just crank up an amplifier and have a guitar in my hand and pluck those strings, right? There's just something about that for me that I really love. In addition to that, my wife and I, we love to fish. We've got a little pond in our backyard where we live out here in south of Atlanta, Peachtree City, Georgia. And we just go out and we fish for bass. And it's such an awesome time to spend with her and cast a line into the water and catch a fish. And I just, all of my thoughts go away as I'm thinking, all right, what's on the other end of this line? How do I need to shake this plastic or lure or whatever to get into it and go? But not so much what it is, but that it is, I think is really important that you bring up, because all of us, regardless of our position, we're going to be exposed to stress, anxiety, the information age, social media, all that stuff is creating more and more stress and anxiety in our lives. And it's really important for emotional intelligence that you figure out what your outlet is and what's working for you. And you might have to try a few things, you know, you might have to maybe it's rolling out the basketball and running up and down that basketball court. I don't know if that's something that you like to do, but that might be a good thing to you know, get your competitive spirit going and get your heart moving a little bit.
I do love basketball, and you probably know that. But we had a mutual, yeah. for what it's worth, I would try to recruit Kevin out there, but yeah, to your point, it's not what it is; it's that it is. I love that, and the emotional intelligence. I think, you know, the connector there, right? And you may have a better definition, my understanding of emotional intelligence. It's really the ability to manage, you know, emotions of you, people around you, really having a connection there outside of just a normal day to day.
Yeah. So like I said, when I first started studying the topic of emotional intelligence, it really was about, okay, who's saying what? Why are they saying that? What are they not saying that they're communicating, and what situation am I in so that I can diffuse this situation? There's been many times in my happy, positive-minded state that I've walked into a situation having zero clue of what's going on and just being happy. And it's had an impact on that situation. Sometimes it's been good. Sometimes it's been bad. But I wouldn't change it. That's what I like to do. And that's for me. And as I've learned more about it, like I said, it's less for me or equally about what I'm observing from other people and how to help them versus, hey, how am I reacting to that? And what is my level of emotion and what type of role is that playing in this interaction that I'm having here? It's so important to be able to recognize that. And I think that it goes beyond the senses, and I'll connect music to this for me anyway, because music is using so many different senses. There's There's tactile feeling. You know, if you have it up loud enough, you can feel the bass. There's what you're hearing in your, through your eardrums and through your ears. And then there's kind of this feeling that I think is an additional sense that as you start to bring these things together, you can understand them and understand how you react to them so that you can apply them in situations that you're in, right? Whether it's, I was in a tense board meeting recently and we were sitting down and I took a moment to get out of my own head and say, hey, you know what? Let's get out and look at this as if I've got a 360 degree view. I'm one of your drones flying over Project Blow Your Mind, right? And look at myself like that in the conference room and look around the room and say, all right, how am I feeling in this? What's going on with me and what's going on with everybody else? And how do we either de-escalate the situation or how do we provide the right idea, the right input to move it in the direction that's going to be productive? And in that, I've had that happen a few times. And there have been many times where I've failed, where I said something and it made the situation worse, right? And as I think about that, you know, this idea of failure, and you add failure into this, you know, leadership and culture, if you're not willing to fail, you're much less likely to succeed, right? And if you're not willing to fail, that means you're probably not going, that you're not going to try, I think is a key. I have a theory. It's probably bad, but, I don't know about you, but when I grew up in the 80s, we played Super Mario Brothers.
We loved it.
It was the game that came with the console. And that was what I like spent hours playing. And while at the time my parents would say, hey, you're wasting all this time. You should be out playing with your friends or whatever. And I did go and do that. But I spent a lot of time playing video games, and Super Mario Brothers was one. And there were others. But as I look back on that, that process taught me to fail. Because if you wanted to beat Super Mario Brothers, you had to go through the levels or go to the boss, and you had to figure out what things you could do, when you could do them, and how quickly you needed to do them, and then you could beat the boss. And the only way to figure that out was to either have the Game Genie, which we couldn't afford, so I didn't have the Game Genie, or you had to try over and over and over. You know how many times I played Super Metroid? Just to figure out how to, where all the things were and how to beat the game, you had to fail over and over and over again to win. And I think that kind of developed this willingness to fail. And that willingness to fail is what gets me up on stage to do a presentation. That willingness to fail is what opens my mouth during one of those tense meetings, that there's a real possibility that what I say could escalate the situation and make it worse. There's also a real possibility that what I could say could calm it down and to derail it and to slow it down. And I won't know unless I try. And so this idea or concept of failure is really important, because, you know, we've all heard it, fail fast. When you're working to create clarity within your leadership organization, whether you're leading a sales team or a construction team or an office team, you've got to be willing to fail. And if you're willing to fail, you can recognize, hey, I did this wrong. We were off on this. I'm going to get this changed. I'm going to get this corrected. We're going to move forward. And I think that's so important when you come to a leader, that if the folks working for you, I have some great leaders, and I've had many great leaders throughout my career. And the ones that I really connect with the most have had times where they said, hey, you know what? We didn't do this right. We need to double back. We need to apply what we need to do, and we need to fix it. And that's from a professional aspect, from an athletic aspect, and even from social settings, church or family or whatever, have opportunities where leaders are willing to admit to failure are the ones that I want to stick to the most. And I want to be that for people on my team.
You know, it's pretty humbling though. I mean, to have self-reflection at that level and to understand failure. And you bring up some good points, Kevin. I mean, I think about just in my life, and I think many people are the same. There's something about the human mind and, you know, us as peoples, that the failure, especially as we push through that, if you have trials or tribulation, you know, hardships in your life for certain reasons, it's funny how you look back at sometimes some painful times, and whether our mind cures it, I think in general, a lot of us can look back at some hard times in our life and although at the time it was probably deep, it was dark, you know, basement has rock bottom, as you figure, or rock bottom has a basement, as I say, you don't remember all the toxic stuff. You know, there's always points of joy and points of success that come from that, right? You look back and you're like, well, I had this setback, this self-reflection, this failure. I had this trial, this tribulation, and it was tough. Like it was tough, but I look at where I'm at today and I wouldn't be who I am today. I wouldn't be in my career position today if it didn't happen, you know, these steps along. And I don't think everyone's that way. I think a lot of people are that way. And so there is benefit to us as humans and individuals to be able to take failure. You know, Mario's a good example. I didn't have the genie either, but you know, but being able to take these examples of setbacks in your life and use those to catapult you forward, you know, there's great learning that comes from those. And as you mentioned, great leaders are ones that can say, hey, I made a mistake. I failed. Because the reality is none of us are perfect. And there's a vulnerability there that really, you know, it's that emotional intelligence. It's that connection we have that, you know, strengthens that relationship.
Yeah, I love that. In fact, if you talk about we talked about the situations with customers in the beginning of this call, and we said it's not a question of if, it's a question of when the process is going to break down or when we're going to have a challenge. And I think, you know, you look at our own personal shortcomings, our shortcomings as a team, and when you plan, not plan to fail, but understand that your plan has an element of failure in it, then it allows you to open up and recognize all of the things that can drive to that failure. And it can allow you to build processes or safeguards around those different things that can create that failure. But recognizing that it will eventually happen, it'll allow us to minimize it. And there are times where there are failures, there are setbacks, there are things that happen to us on a personal or professional level that we may just not understand in the moment. And there have been times in my there was a point in my career where I lost a job. And as I was 15 years into my career, and every job I was at, I was a top performer. And I had opportunities to move up and had managers, you know, meet with me and do performance development plans that it's like, hey, you've got a long runway here. This is where we're going to go. And I found myself at an organization in just a few short months, that organization was sold and I was given the opportunity to go find a different place of employment. And for 3 months, I was looking for the right fit of a job. And it was an extremely humbling experience because it made me question everything I did. I thought, did I deliver the value I needed to deliver? Did I not say the right thing to the right person at the right time? What did I do wrong that got me on this list? And the reality is the list was like 80% of the people, but I was still like, yeah, but 20% made it. How come I wasn't in that 20%? And as I look back on that situation, I am incredibly grateful to have done that, because not only has it given me perspective in this element of failure and the possibility that I might find myself in that situation again, and I'm able to respond in a better way than I had before, but I've had people that I've worked with that have gone through that situation, and I'm able to support, to guide, to direct as they work through those situations in their lives, whether they're my friends, coworkers, or folks in my community that I've talked to. It's allowed me in a much more real and authentic way, connect with them and help them along their journey. It was people who helped me along my journey that got me the job at Sub-Zero Wolf, because after 3 months of looking for a job, it was that sales manager role at Sub-Zero and Wolf that I got to take in the Scottsdale area. And it was an incredible blessing in my life to be able to do that and to look back on a situation like that and have that kind of in my experience that I went through. And I think when you mention, as we look back on things, and we think about the past, we do tend to skew to the positive. And I love that, because why wouldn't we look at it in any other way? You know, when we go through it, I'm not saying we want to go through it again, but when we go through it, we learn. It's the refiner's fire that knocks a few edges off, that smooths us out and prepares us to continue to be able to take on more, to do more, to expand our capacity, our scope, or maybe it doesn't expand our capacity. So it just allows us to be more relatable to someone else whom we can help along the way.
Yeah. And really this goes back to, again, that emotional intelligence, that empathy. It's really hard for us to just be empathetic, right? To put yourself in someone's shoes. But if you've dealt with a similar trial in your life, you know, you gave a small example of being unemployed, but that could be detrimental, right? As you're supporting your family for 3 months, that's a long time. So anyone going through that, there's an empathy, there's an immediate connection because you've been through that, right? And we can use that as human connection points. One thing I want to tie in, and you said this a while earlier in the interview, Kevin, is you were talking about when you're going through the Captivate the Customer, and you said, you know, it has to be process first, right? By having process first, you know, we can have systems, we can have organization. And you in the supply chain world, you know, do a phenomenal job at that. I would imagine your processes without going, you know, down this rabbit hole are extremely on point. However, you're dealing with contractors, you're dealing with distributors, you're dealing with a lot of end users that don't have these processes, don't have these organizations. You know, how does that play a role in your organization, for your sales team, for your leadership and manufacturing team, working with, you know, a chaotic industry that is construction? Or maybe if I put it this way, you know, companies that have good systems and good organization, you know, how does that make the process more seamless for you internally at Renai?
Sure. That's a great question, Brad. And it's actually, you know, what you bring up is something that we've dealt with at Renai, and I'm positive just about every other manufacturer dealt with this over COVID, right? When we saw the swing in demand, immediately we thought, okay, the world is shutting down. We better start shutting things down. Well, shutting something down is much easier than bringing it back online and lighting it back up, right? And so when we started shutting things down, shutting production down, running the expectation that, hey, we're going to have to slow the spread and we're going to hunker down here and this is going to be a challenging time, to almost just a few months later going, wait a minute, if you're in the home building industry, you're just got like gasoline poured on your fire and it's just going to start to burn. And when we went through that, we struggled to keep up with supply. And not only did that struggle to keep up with supply got real, but there became a whiplash effect, because as we struggled to keep up with supply, all of a sudden we start investing resources. We created forecasts. We put things in place that said, we are not going to be out of product for this long. We've got to fix this problem. And as soon as we did that, we start to level off. And now we've got all this product, you know, coming over the water and coming into warehouses, and that created some real difficulty in the way that we had to do this. And I played a big role in my organization to help to forecast that. And there were a lot of things that I did that I could have done better, right? I look back on that and I said, you know what? There were a lot of things that I did that I could have done better, and a lot of things that have shaped the way we do our forecasting for our business. Because as you know, the way a factory wants to produce product and the way the market wants to consume product isn't always on the same time frame. You know, our products need to be at the right place at the right time. We don't want them to be there too early. We can't afford to let them be late. And so this is a very delicate process and requires a lot of feedback from the market, right? We've got to go and leverage our teams to say, hey, what's the feedback in the market? How can we leverage technology to connect with our customers in a much more meaningful way than we ever have before, so that we know as soon as they know what's happening with their demand levels, and then we can begin to create that response so that we can meet the needs of our customers and not carry too much inventory. So that was like a huge learning lesson for me personally and for our business, to go through that COVID kind of whiplash of no demand, overload demand, and then demand leveling off in a way that we had a bunch of product that we moved through. Thankfully, right now we're in a spot where we've moved through the product. We've just executed. We're in the process right now of executing a product transition. It's going very smoothly because of those things that we learned and processes that we've put in place to properly forecast and say, all right, here's what we need. Here's why we need it. And do it in an interval that allows us to respond to market dynamics and market changes.
Yeah, it's a very complex answer. And the reason I bring that up is because, of course, no one sees the pandemic coming, COVID. And that did put our manufacturers and suppliers in a tough position because you go from being shut down. And the problem was, even as we opened up, I mean, here in Phoenix, we were open the whole time, but other parts of the country were still closed. You know, some manufacturing was still closed, even though the construction itself was happening. And so you're dealing, you know, worldwide, with totally different regulations all over. As you know, you look at stabilization now to some extent. I mean, you still have, as you mentioned, you have customer demand, customer focus. You still have manufacturing. A lot of times they don't line up. How tough is that from your role, Kevin, and those in your organization to, because inventory can cost you a lot of money, having that, you know, holding and shipping and retaining and handling, right? That there's cost of goods, right? And so how do you figure that fine balance to know where's the market going? Where's the direction going? At the same time, you're implementing new technology, new product into the space. And so how are you staying just current on demand, new technology, and everything you have to this date?
Yeah. So there's two things. There's one is, where's the market going and how are we going to respond to meet the needs of the market? And then there's this other aspect of, how do we actually drive the market to where we need it to go? Right. So we have a product today. It's a non-condensing tankless water heater, which is a mid-efficient product. It's a great product. And we put a recirculating pump in it so that, you know, folks, when they turn on their faucet, they have hot water in a very, very short period of time. Just a few seconds, hot water would be there depending on the recirculation cycles. Well, this is a very popular, feature in our condensing product and in condensing products throughout the market. But in a non-condensing product, it's new. And right now, the market hasn't said, oh, yes, we really want this product. And so right now we're going, all right, we are over inventoried on this product. We need to either understand the market better. Do they want this product? Is this a feature that they want? Or we need to start to shift and move the product. And we need to go, hey, let's make sure all of our customer base and people who aren't our customer base understand the value and merit of this product and say, you know what? For a lower cost than a condensing unit, I can get this non-condensing unit and it can provide recirculating hot water throughout my home and make a more comfortable, a better, more robust experience for the homeowner in a way that now we can adjust our inventories, sell through our inventories, keep that product going. And we're dealing with this right now, right? Is this non-condensing pump model that we're doing. We've got competitors that are in the market that are talking about launching it, but haven't launched it. So we aren't able yet to look out and see, well, what are others doing with this product? We're kind of blazing this trail. So it's a combination of learning and gathering information from the market. And there are very archaic ways to do it, right? There's, you have your salesperson go out, ask a few questions of customers and write up a call report and then begin to assimilate a whole bunch of emails and Word documents and try to create some information. And there's much more complex ways where you can use a CRM system and you have a salesperson go out and fill out a very regimented group of questions or be able to provide information back in a much more efficient way so that you can process it and actually do something with it in a time sensitive way. And so you have that market response, and then you have the actual, well, what do we need to do to drive the market, and how do we drive more demand for this product that the demand level's not what we thought it would be.
Yeah. And for those listening, Kevin, I mean, of course, I'm familiar with Renai and the product you're putting out there. For those that aren't familiar, speak to what you offer at Renai, you know, the benefit of the product and some of the items out there that are super popular.
Oh, thanks, Brad. This is awesome. Well, at Renai, we are creating a healthier way of living, and we do it primarily through heating water. So we create hot water heaters, and the majority of our line today are tankless hot water heaters, which means a tankless hot water heater, it instantly heats the water. But a misconception for homeowners is, well, if it's an instant hot water heater, that means when I turn the faucet on, I should have hot water. Well, not necessarily. The water has to travel through the pipes in your house from where the water heater is located to where you want the hot water. And some places that might be a very long run. And so you know, with this instant hot water, once you turn it on and it instantly turns on and heats the water, once it gets going, it's going to provide an endless supply of hot water to that faucet or fixture throughout the house, which means I have three daughters. And before I came to work at Rinnai, when I was living in Arizona, I went out to my garage. There was a bunch of water in the garage and my tank had rusted through and sprung a leak. And so I went and bought a Rinnai tankless water heater. I actually installed it myself with the help of a good plumbing friend of mine. I brazed some pipes. It was the first time I'd ever brazed pipes. I said, his name was Will. I said, Will, am I going to hold up? Is it going to be okay? He's like, I'll come over and look at it. And if whatever you didn't do right, I'll charge you twice to fix it. And I said, fair enough. But thankfully he didn't charge me anything because he didn't have to fix it. He's like, hey, your brazing looks a little bad, but if that's the first time you did it, that's not so bad. Anyway, one of the benefits I found out of it, I had my wife and three daughters living with me, and it was a regular occurrence that if I was the last one to get in the shower, it wasn't going to be a warm shower. And in Arizona in the summer, not so bad. In Arizona in the winter, not that fun, right? So with a tankless hot water, we had endless hot water for anybody in the family to be able to enjoy that hot water. And this feature that I'm talking about, which has been on a condensing product, which is a more efficient type of water heater, has never really been on this non-condensing product and offered in the market yet. And so this feature where it has a pump inside the unit will actually circulate hot water throughout your hot water loop in your house. And there are ways, if you don't already have a hot water loop, there are some things we can use like a crossover valve that kind of creates a hot water loop out of the cold water lines in the home, but it essentially allows you to have hot water at your faucets at the time you turn them on. And the system actually has some really great AI built into it that will learn your needs on day one and then respond to those needs on day two. And it'll do that over a 7-day period so that as you use hot water throughout the day, it will anticipate those needs, circulate the hot water so it'll be there when you need it. But that's in a nutshell. You can see I'm getting all excited because I'm a sales guy at heart and talking about my product. But it's a great product. And I have one in my home today here in Atlanta, and we've got a very long run. I actually had the opportunity to pilot test our newest one, which is our newest condensing product. And when I got it installed a year ago, the software wasn't available to run the recirc. And it took me, I had to turn on my shower. It took 3 minutes and 34 seconds for hot water to make it to my shower in my house. And when that pump got turned on, gosh, it was life was good at that point. Cause then I could turn it on. I had hot water right at the tap, which was great.
You know, and this is a huge benefit. This is why, you know, we use Rinnai on every project, you know, for what it's worth. A little shameless plug for you there, Kevin. And I know we converse, you know, when you're joining Rinnai, because we're a huge fan of the product, and it's been a win-win, that relationship, over, you know, for many years now. And so I know you've been gracious with your time, super busy, all that you have going on. You mentioned what you do for fun already. So what's some of the best advice you've been given?
The best advice I've been given. So, you know, I'll share with you something that's been on my mind lately, because I've been thinking about all of the folks who have helped me throughout my professional life, throughout adulthood, right? From a young man as a teenager through adulthood. And I think about these wonderful people, men and women, who are good, authentic people, who have provided coaching to me, who provided opportunities to me. And I think about them, and I think, you know, when I think about them, I think, gosh, Why can't I call him? I need to call Linda Larson, who got me into appliances 25 years ago, and I just need to thank her. And when I think about that, I think, you know, would Linda, I'm sure she'd love a call from me, but I think what she'd like from me more is to do what she did for me, to have me do it for other people. And that's what's been on my mind, is how do I do that more for others? How do I find out what other people need and how do I help them? You know, sometimes it's just a smile and it's a friendly hello. Sometimes it's, you know, taking a friend out to lunch who may have just lost his job and talking him through my experience of when I lost my job and what I did to find a new job and to be there for him and to listen to him. You know, there's all kinds of things that I can do in my life to pay forward what those wonderful people have done for me. And I consider you one of them, Brad. I mean, you talk about the time we met and what was great for you. Gosh, going to see your facility and seeing that golf simulator and listening to you talk about how excited you were about AFT. And AFT at that time was compared to now, it was in its infancy. You know, AFT has been in of itself, from my aspect, a project blow your mind. And so I think about those type of interactions. And I guess if I could say anything to the listeners and really to myself, go out and just help people figure out how to be successful. And that is what will center you emotionally. That is what will help you find clarity in situations that are difficult so that you can continue to lead well. That would be what I've been thinking about.
Well, I can't leave it on any better note, Kevin. I'm not going to take anything from there. That's phenomenal. So for those listening, how can they find you?
Hey, you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn. That's probably the best place to find me. I do have an Instagram. I don't really post anything on it, but LinkedIn's where you find me. And Brad, thanks so much for having me on. I really enjoy listening to this podcast and all the guests that you have. And I love following your projects and seeing what you're doing out in the marketplace. And really appreciate you, man, and appreciate the listeners for being on this episode.
Appreciate you, Kevin. Thank you. If you get value from the show, please support us by giving a 5-star rating and review on whatever platform you listen to. And I also have a favor to ask. We've had some incredible guests that come on and share their wisdom, their knowledge about their business. So if you have friends or family members that could benefit from those episodes, please share it with them, as well as any other business owners that you're networking with that could get value from the podcast or certain episodes. Please share those as well. Again, subscribe, make sure you're following. Any questions that you have, topics, we've had listeners reach out about certain guests that we should have on the show. Again, brad.l@aftconstruction.com. Email me for topics to address, guests that we should have on, and even if you think you'd be a great guest for the show. So again, thank you for all your support, and we'll see you next time.